ADP knows anything you hear, anything you don't hear, anything you kinda heard, anything you weren't supposed to hear and now have to pretend like you didn't, can change the world of work. From HR to payroll, ADP designs forward-thinking solutions to take on the next anything.
The World Health Organization suggests the Omicron variant is less severe than initially feared. Plus, 2021 was a record year for corporate deal-making. Can 2022 bring more of the same? And armchair investigators pull up a seat to the Russia-Ukraine crisis thanks to the power of open-source intel.
There's a lot more information out there now that's unclassified. That allows the Biden administration to talk in more detail about what they see Russia doing.
It's Wednesday, January 5th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. The World Health Organization is tamping down concerns over yet another COVID-19 variant. The new strain was discovered last month in France and contains more mutations than Omicron, but a top WHO official says the strain has failed to spread in a worrisome fashion. COVID incident manager Abdi Mahmoud also pointed to increasing evidence the Omicron variant is causing milder symptoms by affecting the nose and throat more than the lungs.
We are seeing more and more studies pointing out that Omicron is infecting the upper part of the body, unlike other ones, the lung, who has been causing severe pneumonia. It can be a good news, but we really require more studies to prove that.
Japan and Australia are planning to sign a defense deal to counter the rising threat from China. The treaty is due to be agreed on Thursday and would allow their militaries to work more closely together. Australia would be only the second country to have a formal defense pact allowing for entry of soldiers into Japan after the United States. It comes as the U.S. and its allies have stepped up joint military exercises in the Indo-Pacific in recent months. State investigators in California have concluded that PG&E was responsible for last year's Dixie wildfire. Officials say the fire started after a tree came into contact with one of the company's power lines. The blaze charred close to 1 million acres and was the second largest fire in state history. PG&E equipment has been blamed for igniting more than 20 California wildfires in recent years. The company is planning to bury 10,000 miles of power lines to reduce fire risks. And former President Donald Trump will no longer hold a press conference on the anniversary of the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. It comes after a congressional panel investigating the riot said Fox News TV host Sean Hannity had advanced knowledge about the day's events and had advised both Trump and other White House officials. President Biden plans to deliver remarks at the U.S. Capitol on Thursday morning. "2021 was a record year for deal-making. Thanks to low interest rates, the total value of mergers and acquisitions around the world nearly reached the $6 trillion mark. Kristen Broughton covers corporate finance for the Journal and has more on this M&A boom. Hey, Kristen.
Hey, Luke.
All right, just how unprecedented was deal-making activity last year? And remind us of some of the highlights, if you would.
Yeah, 2021 was a big year for deals. Major transactions included AT&T's agreement with Discovery to combine their media assets into a new publicly traded company. Square, the payments company, also agreed to acquire Afterpay, the buy now, pay later provider. And Oracle, right before the holidays, agreed to acquire Cerner, a medical records company. It wasn't just the volume or the value of deals that were struck, it was the type of transactions that were struck. A major factor driving deal making was SPACs, or special purpose acquisition companies. Those, of course, are big publicly traded pools of money that typically have a 2-year window to announce an acquisition. And so SPAC transactions accounted for about 11% of global deal values, according to an analysis by Bain. And so SPACs influence the market not only by buying companies, but also by just prompting privately held companies to consider selling.
Beyond SPACs, what were some of the other reasons that so many companies went on these big ticket buying sprees last year?
Yeah, so there are a number of reasons. Rates are at historically low levels, which lowers financing costs for companies. Companies also stockpiled cash early on in the pandemic and are looking for ways to put that money to work. Private equity fundraising is on a bit of a tear. and corporate earnings are strong. So there are a number of factors.
So how likely is it this trend continues in 2022?
Yeah, M&A advisors say that the factors that drove deal making in 2021 are expected to continue. But of course, there are a couple of caveats. The big one being that the Federal Reserve has signaled that it plans to raise interest rates this year, though it would be doing that off of a historically low base. And that in turn could increase financing costs for companies. There's also the impact of the Omicron variant. And then there's also the potential for additional regulatory scrutiny. Federal Trade Commission Chairwoman Lina Khan has signaled that she plans to challenge more corporate mergers and take on what she sees as monopolistic behavior by companies. So we'll see how that plays out as well.
Kristen Broughton covers corporate finance for The Journal. Kristen, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Coming up, Russia's military is amassed at the border with Ukraine and monitoring their every move. Literally anyone with the patience to scour open source intelligence. How's that reshaping the conflict? More after the break.
You're a growing business and you can't afford to slow down. If anything, you could probably use a few more hours in the day. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
The threat of Russian military aggression against Ukraine isn't new. But what is new, as more than 100,000 Russian troops camp out near Ukraine's border, is that amateur intelligence gatherers are making photos and details of Russia's military activity public. So what does this open source intel mean for the Russia-Ukraine crisis and for how policymakers approach conflict? Warren Strobel is a national security reporter for The Journal, and he joins us now. Hi, Warren.
Good morning.
Okay, before we get into what intelligence gatherers are seeing from Russia right now, I'd love for you to just explain open source intelligence for us.
Back in the day, open source intelligence was basically governments around the world, particularly the U.S. government, picking up foreign radio broadcasts, foreign journals and newspapers, and reading through them for clues. There was a whole agency of the U.S. government dedicated to doing this, but that was during the Cold War. And in recent years, with the explosion of public information and social media, OSINT now includes Twitter and other social media feeds. It includes all the videos and photographs that you can see on social media, not just our social media, but Russian social media, Chinese social media. It includes particularly satellite images, which are now incredibly pervasive and cheap, with literally hundreds of commercial imaging satellites up there in the sky, and other sorts of non-classified public information.
All right, so this sort of intelligence isn't brand new, but it must just be increasing in quantity year by year, right?
Yeah, we tried to make the point in the story that this isn't new in the sense that there's a group called Bellingcat, which has been doing open source for many years. They were able to identify and track three Russian intelligence agencies that they alleged tracked and poisoned a Russian opposition politician, Alexei Navalny. Many news organizations have done open source intelligence, as it were, visual investigations, I guess. But what we say in this piece is that the information is becoming more pervasive, it's becoming cheaper, and you have, in this case, a very interesting sort of a protracted crisis that's going on for months and months. It's not a one-shot kind of deal, which is really giving the open source community a chance to kind of dig in and kind of shine a spotlight.
Yeah, how are they doing that? How is OSINT being used now to monitor the Russian military around Ukraine's border?
Really a proliferation of ways. First, as I mentioned, commercial satellite images. Open source analysts have been able to identify lots of the Russian troop movements and deployments of military equipment. They've been able to track the movement of rail cars and convoys within Russia. It's not as good, obviously, as the U.S. intelligence community has and with their classified systems, but we were told by people that it's actually pretty close, and they do, for relying only on unclassified open information, they do pretty well.
Yeah, diving into that a little further, is it possible to assess how accurate these sorts of open source intelligence reports are compared to the capabilities that a government, let's say like the United States, possesses?
talking to former U.S. intelligence officials, they're actually pretty impressed. And one quick example we mentioned in the story, I talked to someone in the U.S. government in mid to late December who said there are 55 battalion tactical groups, about 800 troops each, that Russia has deployed near the Ukrainian border. And we talked to one of the private OSINT people who said he's identified 48, not using any classified systems. So he's only five behind. So that's pretty close. But there's one kind of major difference. They rely on commercial satellite images, social media, as we've discussed, but there's one edge that the U.S. intelligence community and other major governments have, and that's signals intelligence. And that means intercepting people's phone calls, radio transmission, emails, anything digital. And by some estimates, that makes up in excess of 70% of the intelligence that the U.S. gets. The NSA collects a lot more than the CIA, basically. And that's something that open source doesn't have, at least not right now.
Speaking of its impact, is the proliferation of all this sorts of open source intelligence changing how military actors and, I guess, intelligence services are operating? Can we tell that yet?
Yeah, I think it is in two ways. First of all, let's say on the Russian side, there's more and more evidence that they are realizing that open source analysts are tracking what they're doing, and they're taking steps to cover it up. There's a website in Russia that allows you to track rail cars, where they leave, where they arrive, when they travel. Several analysts had their access to that site blocked. The Russians are also painting over the technical insignia on, say, if you imagine a tank that's sitting on a rail car riding through Russia westward towards Ukraine, they've painted over the insignia so you don't know what unit that tank comes from. They've also covered up license plates. They've done stuff like that. So that's on the Russian side. On the U.S. side, we were told both by people in the U.S. government and by former officials that just imagine there's a lot more information out there now that's unclassified. That allows the Biden administration to, in a way, talk in more detail about what they see Russia doing, because so much information is out there, it sort of gives them the space to talk a little more. They actually declassified some information. So I think it is changing the calculations on both sides, or all sides.
Stepping back, do you think it's possible to assess whether this profusion of open source intelligence is making it easier or possibly more complicated to actually determine what Russia might be up to right now?
Yeah, I think there's certainly evidence in the past that governments have tried to push disinformation or misinformation using social media or other means. I guess the bottom line here, and as we try to point out in the story, is the best analysts at the CIA and the best open source analysts, they can tell you what Russia is doing with its troop movements, which units are going where, how this compares to past military buildups. Neither side, neither open or classified, can tell you right now, is Putin going to invade, when and how? And that is sort of an unknowable quantity. So the open source only gets you so far, I guess.
Warren Strobel is a national security reporter for The Journal. Warren, thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
And finally,
for me, it was really exciting the first time I got to take the autonomous tractor to the field, swipe my phone, watch the tractor start with no one in the cab.
The face of farming could soon change and feature no faces at all. American tractor brand John Deere has revealed a fully autonomous tractor at the Consumer Electronics Showcase in Las Vegas. The high-tech farm vehicle is slated to go on sale later this year and could help address persistent labor shortages in the agriculture sector. But for those who still like to steer their tractor, the new vehicle does allow for that too. And that's What's News for Wednesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.